From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special pledge drive episode of Reveal. I'm Al Edson. Many of the stories we tell on the show are about the criminal justice system and how its ideal of justice for all can end up being more like justice for some, like in this story about a guy named Rodney Roberts. On a gray Monday in Newark, New Jersey, Rodney picked up his older brother, Michael, in his Toyota Corolla.
This is my first time riding with Mr. Rodney Roberts.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know it from his easy laugh and baby face, but Rodney had been behind bars for 18 years. And so, just to drive his brother around Newark, their hometown, he had to relearn the city.
Dude, I got lost when I first came. A lot of buildings, landmarks that I was used to seeing, it was gone. Stuff that I grew up with, buildings I grew up with, was no longer there.
While he was locked up, his father died, the high-rise housing project where he was raised had been demolished, and everyone he knew had gotten a smartphone.
I had to get used to the changes, and it was a lot that I had to get used to.
But this story isn't about how hard it is to adjust to life after prison. This story is about how one man got stuck there longer than anyone intended. Here's Reveal's Stan Alcorn.
Growing up, Rodney Roberts had a hero.
I thought, you know, Eve Knievel was
a man from Duke, Montana.
He's the greatest man on earth. I mean, I tried to do everything he did.
This is TV footage of Evel Knievel about to jump over 14 Greyhound buses on a Harley.
We'll lay garbage cans flat on the ground and jump over like 2-3 garbage cans, see if we can make it.
And he's not hesitating. He'll go.
And I got a few scars to this day, you know. It was the courage of it. So when I got older, me and a friend, we went half on a motorcycle.
Rodney says in the mid-90s, he and his friend each put in cash for a black and yellow Kawasaki.
But when I came to ask him, let me ride the bike for a little while, he had became possessive. Like, well, nah, I need it, you know. I can't get it to you right now. I'm like, what you mean? I'm going to ride the bike. You know, this is me annual bike. You know, I got upset.
This fight over a motorcycle started a chain reaction. Rodney says he called the police, but the title was in his friend's name.
I'm like standing there saying, this is my bike too, but I had no proof. I had nothing.
The police arrested Rodney and eventually brought him to a holding cell just outside the courtroom where Rodney thought he'd be charged with theft.
When I got there, they was telling me that I had more charges. You know, you've been charged with kidnapping and sexual assault. And I was like, what?
Kidnapping and sexual assault of a 17-year-old girl. Rodney knew exactly how serious these charges were, because a decade earlier, when he was 19, Rodney was convicted of sexual assault and served 7 years in prison. He and two other men had stolen a 32-year-old woman's car and raped her. Even though Rodney knew he was innocent of this new crime, he thought the moment he walked into that courtroom, everyone would assume he was guilty. Instead, he decided to stay in the holding cell.
I had refused to go in the courtroom because I wasn't going to dignify these charges with my presence in the courtroom.
Instead of physically dragging him in front of the judge, Rodney says they just opened the courtroom door and the judge shouted so Rodney could hear.
Rodney Roberts! That's how it sounded like, you know, somebody shouting your name in the wilderness. And he was like, these are your charges you are charged with. I can hear that he's agitated. He said, how do you plead? And I said, not guilty. And then they closed the door. And I was so afraid. I was like, wow. Because I had no money, so I couldn't get a lawyer. I didn't know what was going on. I was pulling my hair out because I was panicking. It was a catastrophe.
The court gave Rodney a public defender, but Rodney says his lawyer had bad news.
And he was like, look, this is what's going on. I need to let you know that the victim is out in the courtroom right now. She's ready to testify that you are the guy.
He told Rodney the victim had picked his mugshot out of a photo lineup.
I said, man, that's a lie. He like, man, listen, you about to spend the rest of your life in jail.
But then his lawyer gave him a way out. The prosecutor would throw out the sexual assault charge and the possible life sentence, Rodney would get just 7 years in prison and, with luck, be out in two. All he had to do was plead guilty to second-degree kidnapping.
I'm like, man, I just met you. You were talking about a plea deal. What are you talking about? And he was like, listen, you need to hear me out.
This is what usually happens. Despite what you see on TV, only a tiny fraction of American criminals are convicted by a jury. More than 94% trade their right to a trial for faster, lighter punishment. As the Supreme Court put it in a 2012 decision, plea bargaining is not some adjunct to the criminal justice system. It is the criminal justice system. Rodney took the plea bargain.
They seem to have had all the chips in their favor. They seem to have had everything lined up. I really thought I was doing myself a great justice by not letting them send me to jail for the rest of my life. In my mind, I thought I was saving my life.
That thought lasted until Rodney went before the judge, who asked, did you hold an individual age 17 against her will with the intent to assault her? And he said yes.
I just felt like I betrayed myself in a way that can't be measured. Like, I just gave up my life for a crime I ain't commit, and I pled guilty to something I know I ain't do. I was so angry at myself. I really was feeling so small. If I jumped off the curb, I would leap to my death. That's how small I felt.
Before his arrest, Rodney had been a paralegal. And at the maximum security prison in Rahway, New Jersey, he put his legal skills to work, trying to undo his guilty plea. He spent so much time in the law library, he says the prison gave him his own desk. But nothing he tried worked. He served all 7 years of his sentence. The last day was a spring Sunday in 2004. Rodney and the other prisoners scheduled for release waited by the gates while the guards called their names and let them out, one by one.
But they didn't call me. I'm standing by myself. I'm like, hey, man, y'all forgot somebody. Because they opened the other gate and they leaving now. And I'm still standing. I'm like, yo, you forgot me. What's going on? I'm maxed out today. They're like, man, they got a hold on. We don't know what it is. They say we can't let you go.
And this is where Rodney's story leaves the black and white world of crime and punishment and enters a gray zone. The prison guards put shackles around Rodney's waist, ankles, and wrists, put him in a van, and drove him 3 hours to what looked like another prison.
I said, what is this place? Where am I at?
They told him he was at New Jersey's special treatment unit.
I ain't heard of that. Special treatment unit. Do I get special treatment? What do you mean?
The special treatment unit is a prison building staffed by prison staff, but the state doesn't consider it a prison. It holds men against their will, but it calls them residents, not inmates. Because, like Rodney, they've already served their sentences. They're being held now in what's called civil commitment. It's more commonly used to hospitalize people with schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. But 20 states use civil commitment to hold sex offenders that psychiatrists have deemed mentally abnormal and likely to commit sexual violence again.
They was like, well, we gotta hold you because they have a chart, and this chart determines if you're gonna commit a crime in the future. And I'm like, wow, if you got a tool to see in the future, why are we wasting on this?
The chart turns a criminal history into a score. 1 point for a sex offense, another point if the victim is a stranger, and so on. Rodney's number marked him as a high risk, but the evaluation didn't end there. He was interviewed by a whole series of psychiatrists. He remembers one asking what he would do if Martians tried to abduct him.
I said, well, I would shoot him with my ray gun. So he was like, well, where would you get this ray gun from? I said, well, the same place you would get your Martians from. So
this joke did not go over well. And neither did him saying, I didn't do it. Not only did psychiatrists not believe him, they saw his denial as proof he wasn't ready for treatment. Treatment he needed in order to be released. He was trapped. And the worst part was, he felt like he'd set the trap himself.
I had to undo what I did to myself. So that was the passion that I had, man. I'm going to get out of here. All right. I got myself here, so I'm going to get myself out.
He spent years filing more motions and appeals and getting more lawyers to work on his case. In 2005, one lawyer tracked down the victim who said the story about picking Rodney out of a photo lineup wasn't true. She didn't even know anyone had been arrested. But that wasn't enough. What Rodney needed was something prosecutors claimed didn't exist, a rape kit with the rapist's DNA. Rodney eventually got a court order to force the prosecutors to do one last search.
I got a phone call from my lawyer. He said, man, he found it. I said, 10 years? They've been saying he lost it. What are you talking about? He said, man, they claim it was in the basement mislabeled. And for 10 years, I couldn't get past that. I knew at this point that once they tested the material in the DNA, that I was going to be exonerated. I had no doubt nowhere in my mind.
Sure enough, when the results came back, it wasn't Rodney's DNA.
That moment, I can't even find the words to say how light I felt. You know, I felt like I weighed like 0 pounds.
Rodney was released on March 14th, 2014, after spending 7 years in prison and another 11 in civil commitment. The American Psychiatric Association has called the process used to civilly commit sex offenders an unacceptable misuse of psychiatry. And Rodney agrees.
Yes. How many more mistakes have you made? Who else have you just wrote these reports on and come to court and testify that this guy is this and you wrong? Because they were adamant about their testimony with me. And they were wrong.
Rodney is suing the city, the county, the prosecutor, the cop who claimed to have done the photo lineup, and the public defender who negotiated his plea bargain. He's seeking $36 million in restitution.
That was Reveal's Stan Alcorn. Thanks to Antoine Golday, who first reported Rodney Roberts' story. You can read and see Rodney's story told in illustration at revealnews.org. Listen, people like you, yes, I am talking specifically to you. You are curious and a smart person who understands that the world is complex, and all that complexity can't be given by just a pull quote or a big headline. Instead, you have to go deeper. You have to really dive into the subject to get an understanding of the shape of the thing. That's why you listen to public radio. And if you want to hear more reporting like this, then you have to support it. So please, support this public radio station. Here's how.